Yes.
Yes. Do the lowest note you can.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that? Sounded like a tractor starting. Do that again.
Like that.
You sound. Do the lowest note you can, Mog. Look, mine is. Have you noticed? You have to try and tuck your chin in. When you can't, like, you can't put your neck out. Try to put your neck out and do the lowest note you can.
Oh, yeah.
It's not low no, anymore.
No, it's not.
Do you know what I just realised? I'm 30 fucking 5, man. What's going on?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 23 of Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and my good friend Morgan Richards.
It's me, the one with the fabulous eyebrows, according to everybody who listens to this podcast.
Yeah, because they can all hear your eyebrows rustling on a mic because they're so big, that's why.
Yeah.
That was the worst agree, man. Yeah. Oh, you sounded like I was bullying you. Yeah. Sorry, bud. They're lovely eyebrows. As you know, everybody said they're lovely eyebrows.
Yeah, so can I have my lunch money back now as well?
Yeah, you can have. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Bugger. Whatever I find, I keeps. So this is episode 23 of Sapnin Podcast. And our guest this week is Ryan Richards, former drummer of Funeral for a Friend, and current manager of loads of bands at Future History Management.
And even though he has the same last name as me, he's no relation.
Luckily,
luckily family tree, can't find him.
Luckily for Ryan, no relation.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
Different genes. I don't mean trousers. We had a great conversation with Ryan. We covered loads of stuff. We talked his time in Funeral for a Friend, the whirlwind ride that was Funeral for a Friend. And now he's gone into management at Future History Management. He manages loads of the future of UK music, I reckon.
Well, I guess that's the point of the name, really. But he's going to be talking all about that, who he looks after, explains management a little bit, the ins and outs of it, and gives us a reminiscence of all those years he spent in Funeral for a Friend and some of the key albums they had for that music scene.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was an awesome chat. He's a very, very funny fella, Ryan.
He is, and he's got a great insight into both sides of the music world, hasn't he?
So. Both sides of the band coin, I guess. Mm. Being in a band and then managing bands. I genuinely believe that if he wanted to, he could probably be a stand-up comedian, because I spent some time with him, and he's always been hilarious. So, yeah, it was great to have him on. Right, before we go into that, though, is there any news?
Well, yeah, we've been doing news in and out a little bit.
So sporadic news with Sapnin Podcast.
Yeah. So I think maybe we should try it in future, just even if it's just a little bit of news, to fit it in somehow.
All right.
So yeah. I just wanted to talk about a lot of new music that's out now.
Oh, good.
That I've been listening to lately. And of course, today marks two massive releases. One, the debut EP by Hot Milk.
Nice.
Are You Feeling Alive?
Yes.
Who are former guests
of Sapnin Great Podcast. Humans, fantastic band. Excellent.
Yeah, well, their debut EP is out now, so go and check that out later on, and then go back and listen again to the episode with Hot Milk.
Yes.
And speaking of former guests, Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes
nice.
put out their third studio record today as well, called End of Suffering.
Awesome. I cannot wait to get my hands on that. Fantastic band. One of the best live bands in the world. Some of the nicest people in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got a lot, lots and lots of love for Frank and the Rattlesnakes and Dean. And fantastic.
So what I said about Hot Milk, copy and paste, basically. Yeah. So listen to it and then listen back to the episode with them. They'll be playing Reading Festival as well and awesome. On the main stage, and that's just going to be one giant pit.
Yeah.
A person you love, Sean.
Oh, you be gone.
Little Dicky.
Oh, I do. Yeah correct. Well,
we haven't mentioned his new song, Earth
yeah.
yet. So
I enjoyed it. Yeah. He's got like 35 different artists on it, including Bieber, Sia, Halsey, you name them.
The best bit about it, though, is on the video, he says it's Kanye West, but it's actually Kevin Hart,
yeah.
Which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, apparently he was trying to get Kanye West, and he could not get in contact with him.
Mad.
How mad's that?
Yeah.
You'd think, like 6 degrees of separation, Lil Dicky's got to be 1 degree away. Like, surely Lil Dicky knows someone who knows Kanye. That's the end of the connection. But he couldn't sort it out. So.
Mad. And obviously, he couldn't get hold of you either.
No. Well, yeah, obviously tried me, yeah.
You were a little bit busy with this, so sorry.
Sorry to Dave, that's his name. good song, and it's about saving the Earth, which we should all really start looking into, because as Greta Thunberg's been going around the country and telling people we're going to be in trouble soon, so, hey guys, if you listen to this, think about recycling a bit better. And also, go back and listen to the Dougie podcast, because he's telling you more about climate change.
Does, yeah.
All of this news is linked back to stuff we've previously done.
Right.
Stop plugging our own podcast our podcast.
Right, future stuff. Music I've been listening to a lot lately. William Ryan Key, who many of you know from Yellow Card. He's got a new EP out of electronic and acoustic stuff, which I very much enjoy.
Nice.
A lovely new artist called Lizzie Farrell has been grabbing my attention a lot as well.
Farrell.
Not Farrell.
Spell it.
Farrell.
You don't have to spell it out for the listeners.
I think it's F-A-R-E-L-L, but I might be wrong.
It's definitely
so double R. What I'm going to do very quickly is fact check myself.
Google. I bet it's double R.
It's F-A-R-A-L-L.
Oh, you said E.
No, sorry, it is double R. God,
you can't even read.
F-A-R-R-A-L-L. She's very good.
Hi, guys. If you're listening to this and you think you could maybe co-host a podcast, please get in touch with me at seansmithislookingforapartner@gmail.com. No, that's my sex. Never mind. Said too much.
Yeah. William Ryan Key, Lizzie Farrell. If you like metal, gothic music, New Year's Day have got a new album out as well, nice. Which is very good. And Sum 41 have got a new song out.
Oh, have they?
Yes.
Are they going to be touring later
in the
year?
They are going to be touring later on the year.
Which means the Blackout are going to have to get back together to fill in for Sum 41,
aren't
they?
That's what I was going to say. Have you been asked to be on standby just in case they drop out?
Not yet, but whoever's putting that tour on, if you make a big enough offer, I can put it to the Blackout boys and we can see. Because I'd love to fill in for Sum 41 again, and I'm sure Sum 41 fans would absolutely love that again. You poor bastards.
Just
sorry, guys.
Fat lip. And then, Yeah.
Cool. So that's it, is it?
Yeah.
Awesome. If you've got any news or any artists you think we should check out, please get in touch with us at twitter.com/sappeninpod, SAPPENINPOD, or Instagram us at instagram.com/sappeninpod, SAPPENINPOD. And tag people you want to come on the podcast, future guests.
Yeah, and make sure you tag them. We're going to be at a lot of festivals across the summer, we keep mentioning. So, anyone on those lines?
Name them all, go!
Slam Dunk, Download Festival, 2000 Trees, and Reading Festival.
Nice, well
Sappening
named.
Podcast will be appearing at all those festivals listed. If you'd like any guest to appear from that festival onto the podcast, please mention them via Twitter or Instagram.
You turned into like a terms and conditions fella then, at the end of like a bank advert.
I was trying to do it the whole thing, but I ran out of things to say.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
But if you'd anyone you'd like us to get, please let them and us know, and we can make your dreams come true.
Awesome. This is a long interview with Ryan, so we should get into it. But
Patreon is a good thing we should mention, because we love our patrons.
Yes, yes, patrons. Yeah, yeah, no, we do. They're fantastic.
So, yeah, if you'd like to help support the podcast in any way, patreon.com/sapnin is the best way to do that. It lets you give back to the podcast, and you get loads of different rewards, exclusives, and different tiers in return as well. The lowest tier gets you into the Sapnin Podcast community group, which is the best experience of the week
you.
For us.
Yeah, because all they're doing is bragging about how good your eyebrows are and how cool you are and how much of a dick I am.
Yeah, I never imagined.
Yeah, that's true, but it's my podcast. So when they...
It's our podcast.
We'll have a look at the photos.
But my eyebrows are on point, so maybe my eyebrows should be on the cover of the podcast in the future.
Morgan's eyebrows are Morgan Richards, the new podcast.
Anyway.
Patreon.com/sapnin. Help us out if you can. That would be fantastic. Honest to God, it's genuinely much appreciated. It really, really does go to helping us out and getting us to these festivals and getting guests and all of the stuff. You can see it on the website. Anyway, let's get to this podcast. This is a great one.
Yes. Before we do, though...
Oh, my God! What?
Would you say you're casually dressed?
Oh, my...
Do you fancy a deep conversation?
Bro, I'm going to fucking stab you now. I swear to God, I'm going to stab you. Shut up. This is Ryan Richards on Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and no longer Morgan Richards. It would be me doing the outro, so wait till the end because Morgan is fired. I hate him.
I hate it.
Shut up. Shut up. Sapnin!
Sapnin.
Just shut up. Sapnin!
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 Oh, lucky.
Caught me out.
This is episode 23. Somehow, we've been allowed to make 23 episodes of this bollocks. This is episode 23 of Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and my partially good friend, Morgan Richards.
I'll take that.
Oh, that's it, is it?
Yeah.
All right, then that's this week's episode. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Sapnin.
Oh, yes, we've got a guest. I forgot about our guest. This week, we've got a fantastic... I say fantastic every week. It's because I like everybody. We've got
pick another word. Pick a better word.
Give him a different adjective.
We've got the tremendous. Is that all right? Same vein, isn't it?
That'll do.
We've got the tremendous Ryan Richards from Future History Management fame. And formerly of Funeral for a Friend and the Hondo McLean fame as well. Two of my favourite South Wales bands ever.
Thanks.
That's all down to you as well. So
I know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, thanks.
What's news with you? How's things?
Good. Got my new oven a few months back. I'm only saying that because there was a bit of a thing about it online before because... I'd ordered a new oven, and it didn't turn up for 2 years. So it's a bit of a saga. But I just wanted to.
Hang on. How do you order an oven and it doesn't turn up for 2 years?
It's a long story. I mean, how long we got? I fucked it up. Really, it wasn't all Curry's fault. Curry's the shop, not the food. Nothing to do with the oven. But no. There we go. I've got that out of the way anyway. But yeah, other than that, managing bands and shouting into a mic again as
nice.
Well. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Not now, but...
Well. Not yet. We'll see how this interview goes. It might be shouting into it by the end of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, Subtraction.
Yeah. A bit of heavy metal.
Nice.
Selling a little? Or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, so one of those things where I kind of always wanted to do it, really, because when I was in funeral, I was always the growler, as it were. I don't know, it was one of the things I'd always like to try that, you know, something super heavy, because obviously I was drumming in funeral and doing the heavier vocals. And you know, we had our heavy moments, but, you know, we were, I think, fundamentally a melodic rock band, or emo or screamo or whatever we were called. But, I was wanting to do something, you know, super intense and brutal and heavy. So, yeah, we stuck on a track a couple of months back and working on a little mini album, as you speak. So
awesome. Yeah. Ooh.
Shut the fuck up, Siri.
I hope we picked that up, Ben. I hope that's in there. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Who's anybody else in the band that we'd know of?
Well, one of the guys in the band, Abraham Fahima, he plays bass in the band, and he actually mixed the latest record, well, the only record by Holden Absence, who... Obviously, you had on the show a few weeks back, and part of my future history management roster. So he mixed that. He's a very talented studio producer, mixer guy. So he's in the band. And a fantastic South Wales talent named Curtis Bagley, who's, I mean, you know, listen to the stuff. He's one of the best guitarists I've ever seen. And when I wanted to start doing this, I was speaking to a friend of mine. I was speaking to Faisal from he was in Holding Absence, and he plays in Loathe now. And I said, "Oh, you don't have any really good guitarists around the South Wales area?" And he's like, "Oh, my mate Kurt, you need to check him out, man. You need to check him out." I was like, "Oh, cool." So sent me his stuff, and you know, saw him playing. I was like, "Jesus Christ, you know, this guy's really, you know, why is he not in a band?" He's like, "Oh, I don't know, really." So I was like, "Should we make a band?" I was like, "All right,
yeah, can do."
Yeah, can do. Did do, and here we are.
I can play all the notes. Good, yeah, good. Get in the band then. What? Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? There's people just sitting in the house who are unbelievably talented musicians, just not in bands, like.
Yeah, and he was definitely one of those, and looking forward to. I mean, get out there and doing a gig or two and see what's what. But with everything else at the minute, being pretty busy, we're treating it as a bit of a fun project, and having a laugh with it, and just enjoying doing it, really, and not having any pressure or expectation, or just enjoying it.
Yeah, snap. That's kind of what we're doing with Raiders as well. I think we just put a track out just so people can hear it, and then I just want to play shows again. Just I miss that greatly, but
what I mean. I miss, but you know, I get a lot of people ask me, they're like, "Oh, you know, do you miss being in a band? You know, do you miss this and that?" I was like, you know, the thing I miss is making music with people, and you know, coming up with those ideas and just the process of going in and tracking it and through the demo stage, and then you know, having that final thing there and letting people hear it. You know, that's the part I miss. In terms of, you know, being in a band, I don't really, you know, I don't miss the touring. You know, as much as I loved it, you know, that was a sort of certain part of my life, and I don't think I could hack touring again. You know, just that whole process of making music. So it's cool to be doing that again.
You've got future history management now. So yeah, your focus is mainly on that now. So, you know, I understand that they will not want you to tour and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I get to experience all those highs of being in a band just through the bands that are doing it. I mean, I think that was the first time I ever realized that, you know, maybe my time in Funeral was coming to an end, where I was still in the band and I was, you know, just started taking an interest in management and, you know, helping out some, you know, Welsh bands and, you know, trying to get into it and learn a bit about it and get some experience. And I think when I started to get more excited about one of those bands, selling out a tiny pub in South Wales, than I did about us selling a Brixton Academy, or, you know, more excited about them getting a small introducing feature in Kerrang than us being on the cover.
Yeah.
I started to realize then that, you know, maybe, you know, things were changing for me and this was where my passions were and going forward. And that's how it's been, you know. It's been about 10 years now doing that, really. It's 10 years this year managing, so.
Yeah. How did that conversation come up with the Funeral Boys about wanting to shift gears?
Yeah, I mean, I they wouldn't have been surprised, I don't think. I mean, you know, I remember one of the last tours I ever did was with the Blackout with you guys, and we were sharing a bus doing a tour across Europe. It was just a lot of fun, but By then I knew that.
Oh, don't say it's because of.
It's because of you.
We shared a bus in the Black, and I was like, "Fuck this! I'm not doing this ever again."
That was it, really. Yeah, that was the end of it. But
Snoz is too nice. I hate it. I can't be near him.
I'm never gonna achieve that level of niceness. So let's fuck it. Let's just But by then it was. You know, I had a, you know, young family by then and everything, and, you know, I just got married and whatnot, and I don't know, man. You know, we were touring all these amazing places, and you know, we'd done that round a lot of times. You know, everywhere we'd been there multiple times, and I remember with you guys, you know, it was all a bit like newer to you, and you know, I remember we did a show in Rome, and you know, all you guys went to the Colosseum and everything, and I was like sitting in the bus playing Football Manager on my Mac or wherever, you know, and I remember we had like 3 days off in Amsterdam, parked outside the Melkweg venue there, and yeah, it was Amsterdam, you know, it's a place that so many people go to have a good time, and again, you know, I remember watching, I think, all of the Star Wars films, and eating about, and just eating walk to walk, and that was sort of, I was just done by then. I was just fried. I was just sort of, you know, it wasn't enjoying it anymore. You know, enjoying the shows, but I could tell that the passion had gone. So when it came around to speaking to the band, they weren't surprised at all, I don't think, and they understood, and we sort of, like, you know, carried on doing everything that we had in the books. It was the end of that year. We had some gig at the end of the year. It was in Gloucester Guildhall, I think it was, and that ended up being my last gig. And one of the things that, you know, they said, "Oh, do you reckon that you could help us? You know, you could at least do this next album then." So, which was the. Bloody hell, which album was it?
Welcome Home Armageddon, was it?
No, it was the one after... Conduit, yeah. That was it, yeah. So we went down and we recorded that in James Dyson's son's house. Know, yeah. Yeah, of the vacuum...
What's it called? The distillery?
The distillery, yeah. Yeah, so the guy who makes all those swanky vacuum cleaners and...
Who's fucked off, taking his business and fucked off to China now, we have. Lord Dyson.
Gone to China, has he?
Yeah, he's shipping it all out.
What a bastard. Yeah, we went and his son had this studio, which was just, you know, incredible studio. And we went there and I made that record with your friend and mine, Romesh Dodongoda.
Yes.
We went and made that record with him and I left after that. And then... It was something then with the record label where they were like, "Oh, you know, I think the band needs to have a break or something. Or something like, we're probably not going to be able to release this record for another 9 to 12 months, I think it was, for whatever reason. And at that stage then they were like, oh, you know, it's probably better then, if that's the case, then we just, you know, we'll get our new drummer in and, you know, re-record all that. So so there is a version of Conduit out there with, you know, all my drum parts, and obviously we wrote it together. But yeah, that was the end of that then. And, you know, off they went and did their thing. I did my thing. Joined Raw Power Management then.
Was that a smooth transition then from Funeral to that?
Yeah, it really was. It really was. Because, you know, Craig Jennings, who runs Raw Power and was our manager and, well, a Black House manager and, you know, Kids in Glass Houses and many others. It was one of those things when I told him how I was feeling and that I was probably going to leave, then he was like, oh, you know, what are you going to do? I said, I really want to get more into management. And it's like, right, okay, you know, fair enough. Good luck and whatnot, and that was that. Then, you know, we had this sit down that we had, and it's probably maybe a week later. I said, oh, you know, we should let's catch up. You know, just have a chat about something, and that was that. We sat down. It's like, you know, well, if you're gonna do this, why not just do it at Raw Power? You know, why don't you come and work for me and you know, stay under. Well, you know, stay with the company, really, yeah. which is what I did, and that was like late 2011, early 2012, and had been there until just less than a year ago now when I started Future History.
Nice. How did that come about?
That was a strange one, really. I'd been when I started. You know, when I left the band, as I said, you know, one of the reasons was I had a new family and I was always away, and, you know, you could be on tour, you know, I could leave the house, you know, say goodbye to my wife and kids and not see them for like three months or more. And I was always, you know, the toughest part about being in a band and touring. And yeah, it got to the point where it's like, well, you know, I don't want that sort of lifestyle anymore. Wanted to be home more, and that was managing. And then I think, you know, for the first few years at Raw Power, it was you know, I could get away with just coming in now and then, but then as I sort of got more senior in the company and working with bigger bands and you know, having people, you know, having my own like assistants and stuff like that, then I was really needed to be in London a lot more and be there so that I could, you know, delegate, or I could, you know, have these meetings, and, you know, because I had a more important role then, as it were, and working with, you know, bigger bands like Bullet for My Valentine and stuff like that, then it called for me to be there a lot more. And I was living there. I was living up in Crouch End with two of the other guys from Raw Power, and I was up there, you know, sort of 3-4 days a week then, which I, you know, I just felt like I was creeping back into how it used to be with touring, really. And yeah, I think that was the main thing. That was the main thing, yeah. And just wanting to be home more, that, you know, that was a big thing. And just, I don't know, it just felt like time, really. It just felt like the right time. I, you know, I learned so much there and opened so many doors. But yeah, it was time for me to do my own thing. You know, I was looking at different bands that I knew that I wouldn't have been able to bring in to Raw Power, just because, you know, they had so much going on there and so much for me to do with, you know, with the big bands I was working with there. So it was that, really. Yeah. You know, bad breakup stories or anything like that. It was just the right time.
Who were you looking after at Raw Power at the time? Bullet.
Tonight Alive as well?
I had been for a while, yeah. I started working with Tonight Alive in 2012 when they'd only been over here, over to the UK just the one time. And I went over to... It was really exciting because I'd been working at the company for a couple of months, and Craig had said, oh, you know, we got this brand new band from Australia. They're really cool. You know, I think you'd like them. And I checked them out. I was like, yeah, that's you know, that's really cool. You know, it got that. It was very much at the time they were always going to get that Paramore comparison. Because you know they're doing what they were doing, and you know with. Yeah, they were just always going to get there, having a female singer and everything. And so I went out to Warped that year, 2012, and watched them, and you know, thought it was great, and took it from there. And we did a lot of great stuff together. You know, the first tour I ever did with them, they were headlining the Barfly in London, which is like a 200 capacity venue. And in the space of 18 months, we had sold out two Cocos, which are like, you know, 1,300 each, and, you know, a Manchester Academy. And, and yeah, you know, we were feeling good about it all, but it's one of those things where at the time, you know, they had a different US manager, and it was difficult. It's a difficult situation when you've got one management team in the US and then one management team elsewhere, and you've got those, you know, it's hard enough when you've got one manager and you've just got a band. It's really hard to you know, make those decisions and to you know, decide what's the best route for the band. You know, when should they be in the US, when should they be in the UK, when should they be in Oz, what should be the next single, you know. It was really tough. And you know, I think it got to the point where something had to give, and you know, they'd been with their US management longer, and the US management was sort of the band wanted to go in a bit more of a poppy direction, which you saw happening. You know, from my point of view, I was very much always thought that, you know, they were just a really great rock band.
Because I've got a lot of love for Tonight Alive, but they've been a band who have changed through every album, both image-wise and music. So we're working so close with them. Was that a thing that they always wanted to kind of do?
Yeah, did they tell you prior to them changing that they were always aiming to be a poppy?
Could you always see that they were, once one record was out there, the next one needed to be completely flip-turned, or was it?
It was tough because, you know, they were very young, and, you know, really great people. I know, I can't say enough good things about them as people. They're wonderful people, and they're very young, and they got signed to a major label when they were, you know, still teenagers, and had a lot of expectation on their shoulders, and had a lot of unfair comparison, I think, with Paramore, you know, essentially just because Jen is a female and Hayley Williams is female. So I think that there was a lot of external pressure there. And I just wanted to, I don't know, I was always just a real believer in them doing what they were doing naturally. And I don't know, there was a lot of voices saying you should do this, you should do that, you should be this, you should be that. And something had to give. And that was that then, you know, which... And it's a shame because I think we were onto really great things there, and there was, you know, particular things that were on the horizon after doing that run of shows where they'd sold, you know, we'd upgraded every single show. They had the, like I say, the double Coco sellout and the Manchester Academy and just every show on the tour. And after that, then we'd been offered to headline Brixton. And I can say it now, you know, the bill that was proposed was Tonight Live, Neck Deep and Paris.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Which would have been amazing. But they didn't want to do it for whatever reason at the time, because, I don't know, it was... maybe not wanting to be seen as, you know, pigeonholed in that pop-punky sort of thing. And, you know, the record that came out after that was very different and, you know, lots of electronic stuff and, you know, very, very poppy and whatnot. So at the time, you know, they didn't feel like it was the right thing.
That's crazy, though.
Yeah, it's mad to think, especially all those bands you just mentioned at that time would have been three of the hottest bands in... the scene
absolutely. I mean, Paris were, it was one of those things with Paris that they were quite new, but it was, you know, anyone could see that was going to happen. Yeah. You know, that band was was going somewhere. And of course, neck deep were on that upward trajectory that they've continued to be on. I mean, you know, maybe this was just an idea that was proposed to us by the promoter at the time. Maybe neck deep or Paris might know or wanted to have done it. I don't know. But yeah, that was, you know, that was the idea, which would have been really cool. But yeah, like I say, it sometimes happens. But I would say, yeah, it's a very difficult situation when you've got that many chefs in the kitchen, as it were.
Can imagine.
Well, fast forward to today. You're managing again, Futuristry Management. Tell us some of the lineup.
Yeah, well, the first band, I mean, I was managing Holding Absence at Raw Power. They were a band of the South Wales band, which, you know, I'm based in South Wales, as we all are here. And it was one of those things where they'd come through. I'd met James at the Download Festival in it was 2016, and we had the football, the European Championship football was on, and my friend Dean Whittaker, who's a promoter down in South Wales, he was coming up, and I said, oh yeah, we're gonna be watching the football in the tent, and he said, oh yeah, can I bring my mate James as well? He's in a band. I was like, yeah. I said, yeah, but you both gotta wear a Wales jersey though if you want to come in the tent for the football. And he's like, you serious? I was like, yeah. He said, oh, James hasn't going. Like, he's really tall. He's like 6'6", I think.
He's really tall, and they don't make tops big enough.
Yeah, I didn't even know him. I said, oh well, sorry. He's got to have a Wales shirt.
You have to wait outside then.
Yeah, because otherwise I'm the only person in this tent with a Wales shirt, and everyone else with their English shirts.
Look, so. I need somebody else to wear a Wales shirt to be the shield in case somebody tries to stab me.
Yeah, I need you two massive fellas to come in the tent and Wales shirt. Yeah, basically. So it was funny then. The game was about to start, and I looked out. And there was Dean waving outside, Ryan, and he got his Wales shirt on, and this big tall fella next to him with a Wales, a brand new Wales shirt that he had just bought the day before. Aww. It was brilliant. I said, oh yeah, fair play to us. I like this guy coming in. And I had good fun. And then on the way home, then we were driving back, because I had a lift back home with Dean and James, and he was like, oh yeah, if, you know, you get a lot of it. I suppose, oh, I'm in a band called Holding Absence. I'll send you, like, you know, I'll email you some stuff. I was like, oh, cool, man. And I think at the time he was like, oh yeah, we haven't released anything yet, but it's coming. You know, we got a new singer, and the first track's like coming out on the weekend. I was like, oh, cool, man. Yeah, I'll check it out. You know, I'll keep an eye out for it. And it came out, and I saw it, and I was like, jeez, you know, this is really, really good. Like, this is awesome. And you know, I know you've said the same thing to me privately, you know, but first time I saw them and hearing them, it felt like, you know, when Funeral was coming through, when, you know, the Blackout and Kids in Glass Houses and everything else, you know, I got that same sort of buzz and excitement from it. You know, it was rough around the edges and whatnot, and it was new, and they were getting to grips with it, but there was something there. And you know, Lucas is incredible singer, just a real natural front man, and you know, the guys are great musicians, and that was it. You know, I was like, oh, you know, I just really need to work with this band. It was a real passion project for me, and I was like, you know, because they were Welsh as well, I was like, yeah, we can, you know, we can really do something here. And and we did. I got to bring them into Raw Power and develop it, you know. You know, we took our time with it, really. It'd been, because it all happened quite quickly for them. They got together, you know, Lucas joined the band, and then a few days later their first video was up online on Dreambound, and it's, you know, it's getting like, it had like, you know, 20,000 plays in the first week, you know, for a brand new band that nobody had ever heard
that's
of. And then Sharptone Records, who we'd been working with them at Raw Power with, because they signed Don Broco.
Yeah.
And I think they may have signed Miss May while they were still with us, maybe. But yeah, they were working with Don Broco. Mm-hmm. And then I reached out because James had said, oh, you know, someone from Sharptone has been in touch. So I sent them, and I was like, oh, hey guys, you know this band Holding Absence? And then the two guys, Sal and Sean, came back and said, oh, yeah, we love that band. Are you guys going to be working with them? I was like, yeah, I think we are. And so I think, you know, next couple of days, they were like, right, let's get on the phone and let's work out a deal because, you know, we want to sign the band. And So we did, you know, within a couple of months of even just knowing of the band and knowing the guys, you know, we'd taken them to Raw Power, they'd signed to Sharptone, you know, they'd been on signed to UTA then for booking. So it was all very quick. And from there then, one of those bands that just wanted to play everywhere, really. Yep. get out there and play, and you know, up and down the country. They didn't, you know, care where or how much the fee was or how many people were going to be there. They just had that work ethic of, let's, you know, we want to get out there, we want to play. And you know, we built that up. So it was, I guess, you know, over a year then, and had a couple of lineup changes in the band, and it finally became time to think about, right, let's get that debut album going, because they'd released just singles sporadically. And they wrote an amazing debut record. And at the time, you know, I was they hadn't fully recorded it yet. I was leaving Raw Power, and they came along with me. You know, they were my sort of first band to bring across. And you know, it's great to say that it's all going really great with them. Yeah. And people,
oh, they are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's loving the record, and you know, the live show. And
like you said, when I saw him in Cardiff, that's how I genuinely felt. Like, me and you stood there and we watched, like, from the sides, and just to see the passion in the kids, not even just the band, but the passion in the fans as well. And it was just this one big thing that just made me, like you said, just remember the old days when it was, that excitement was there. And I was just blown away by it. Because, like, I'd heard them before and I really liked it. But then you can hear somebody on record and really like it, and then when you see them, you could be a bit disappointed by it. Complete opposite with All In Absence. I thought the record was great, and then I saw him live and I was like, wow, this is a resurgence for South Wales.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say about the fan base as well, because, you know, that was something that really impressed me and still does with them, is their relationship with their fan base. You know, they've got their like Facebook group called You Are Everything as a group, and just the community on there is something that's I couldn't believe, but before their debut album was even released, so many people sending in tattoos that they've had, you know, of their moth icon, and people having it across their throat and across their chest, and you know, and stuff like that. So they've got that real bond with their fan base, and I think that's something that was really important.
I've seen it from following them all on social media, and like, it's not, doesn't feel like a faked thing. Like, sometimes you can see when bands are doing it and it feels fake and it's just a bit like, oh, this is plastic. But yeah, with them, I genuinely believe they are kids who are playing music, two kids who love music,
want to hear that music. It was a connection from day one, it seemed.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you mentioned, people getting to tattoos straight away and everything like that, it just seemed that they bonded with people, with fans from the get-go.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, they really did. And you know, I can say that behind the scenes, it's exactly the same. You know, it's not just something that they put out on, you know, online or on the group. You know, every conversation that we have about what we're doing, and a good reference point is when we were back in March when we did the headline tour. It was originally, we had Capsize on the tour, the US band, and we were going to do the European shows with them. And they obviously they had allegations of misconduct come up, and the first thing that, as soon as the band found out, they were like, you know, we can't do these European shows. You know, it's not fair on our fans to put them in that uncomfortable position. You know, there was never any thought of, oh, you know, we're going to lose some money here, or oh, we've put these deposits down for the van, or blah blah blah. Because they were, you know, they lost out on money on a tour, but there was never any sort of concern whatsoever for that. It was just, you know, we need to do this for our fans. You know, we need to make these steps, and that's always the way it is with them. You know, they're really honest and yeah. And true people.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Lovely
and,
kids.
And with that, you're looking after a few more bands, Loathe.
Yeah, well, with Loathe, yeah, that came last... When was it? Yeah, it was 2017, I suppose. Yes, it was. So at the end of 2016, excuse me, and we were looking at, you know, what should we do next touring-wise and what should we do next released-wise? Because up until that point, Holding Absence had... You know, they'd done a few support tours and they'd, you know, released, I don't know, maybe three singles. It was something like that. You know, what next? And we came up with the idea of doing a split because a lot of our favorite bands growing up did splits and, you know, split finals and whatnot. And obviously with online, you can do that sort of thing online too. And the band that they unanimously wanted to do that with was Loathe. You know, they'd played shows together before. I mean, if you look at the first ever Hold an Absence video for Permanent, Lucas is wearing a Loathe t-shirt, yeah. Which is, you know, first time I'd ever saw that band name or anything like that. So we did that and we put this tour together called the This Is As One tour, and it was the split EP release, so you know, two songs with each band, and then just rotating headline around the UK then, and which was a really exciting thing to do because we handpicked supports from the UK for every show, and even from then, you know, we had Modern Era at the time, who've, you know, gone on to do really cool things, you know, really great up and coming band. Parting Gift, again, signed to Fearless. Sleep Token, who, you know, another Future History band, just signed to Universal. Foxjaw, who, again, another one that Future History, and they're just about to sign a deal in the next few days. But yeah, I mean, it was really exciting, and it's cool that, you know, all those bands that we had played with, Lotus Eater was another one, and you know, they've just signed to God Complex. I mean, you look back on that poster with all the bands that were sort of, you know, opening under Loathe and Holding Absence. It was incredible to you know, it really was, you know, capturing a moment in time. So yeah, with Loathe, you know, I was obviously highly involved in, you know, making that that split record work and the tour, and you know, I hadn't seen them before then. You know, I hadn't watched the band live. You know, I liked their music and whatnot, but they're just
live is something else.
Just unbelievable live band, and yeah, when the opportunity came up to work with them, which was just as I was about to launch Future History, it was like, yeah, you know, absolutely, and again, they've been working on their second album now for, and almost finished that, and they're out with Hollywood Undead at the moment, and I went along to see them at Brixton Academy the other day, and it's one of those places, Brixton, where it can be pretty unforgiving for a support act. You know, whether that be the sound or the reception or you know, sometimes a band who are doing, you know, pretty good and going around the UK and smashing the, you know, the smaller sort of underground circuit, if you like, sometimes, you know, you can put them on stage at somewhere
translate.
Like, yeah, you can put them, you know, somewhere like Brixton Academy, and it's too much for them, you know, it can just swallow you up because it's just so overwhelming. But yeah, you know, just watching them go out there and really attack it and own the stage and you know, I wasn't sure what sort of response they would have from the fan base of Hollywood Undead, because they're a much different sounding band, and Loathe are, you know, just really heavy, abrasive, you know, entity, and to see how well they did up on that stage, which was the biggest show they'd ever played, just really bodes well for, I think, where they're going in the future.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Going back now to the Funeral days, and you mentioned leaving in 2012 just after doing Welcome Home Armageddon and Conduit. I think at that time, a lot of fans felt that was the kind of second coming of the Funeral for a Friend after everything that happened over the last couple of years. For you deciding to leave with all the management stuff coming up, did you feel it was kind of the perfect time to leave because everything was on a positive and it wasn't any negatives going, you hadn't fallen out with the guys, it was just you wanted to try something new?
Yeah, it was. And you know, we had the first the same lineup for the first two records for Casually Dressed and for Ours, you know, which I think people generally look upon as the sort of, I don't know, quintessential funeral records. And then, you know, Gareth, our bass player, left after after we did the third record, Tales and Tell Themselves, and then Darren left after we did the fourth record, Memory and Humanity. And I think by that time, the band, so, you know, myself, Darren, Chris, and Matt, were probably, you know, not to speak for them, but we'd been around the world so many times. It felt like just the band. Maybe it was just me, more so me than anyone else, but felt a bit jaded at the time. So when Gav and Rich came in, you know, both from Honda McLean, which I'd been an original member of that band, when those pair came in, it was like a breath of fresh air, really, because it was all brand new to them. And
excited. It's nice to see other people excited, and
yeah,
you can get jaded. It's like we took Scott Evans, we took him to Australia as like a guitar tech on Soundwave, and it was more exciting for me to have him there because he was new to everything than it was to have just been... If I was just with my band, I'd have been bored all the time and just been like, all right, yeah, we've done this.
Yeah.
But because Scott was there, I was like, oh, we need to go see this. You need to see this. Check this out. And yeah, like we were saying with Gavin, Rich, it was just a new energy, just an excitable energy.
Exactly. It was that. And, you know, they brought a lot to the band as well, you know, to the live show. And I still think that the Welcome Home Armageddon record, which was the first record we did with that lineup, I still think I sort of changed my mind from day to day, but it might be my favorite funeral record. You know, I think it's one of those that if you go back and listen to it now, it's a really strong record. I mean, and a lot of that was down to what Gav and what Rich brought to the band, I think there was a sort of thing to it where they had come in and they had injected all this new life into the band. And I think that was really one of the things that made me realize that I was sort of over it, really, because I was seeing how much they were enjoying it. And I knew that I wasn't enjoying it as much. And I almost felt a bit like I was, didn't deserve to be there anymore, I was living many, many people's dreams. I mean, anyone who's ever picked up an instrument, I suppose, you know, touring the world and doing these shows and whatnot. And I don't know, yeah, there was that sort of element of feeling a bit guilty about it. And I had done all my, you know, crazy partying in the first, you know, few years of being in the band, you know, just drinking every night and whatnot. And by the time I got to that point, I was, you know, I'd just become a father for the first time and got married. And I think for the first big tour, I mean, we toured across Europe with Bullet for Valentine, and that was the first big tour that they were both on, I think. It's either that or one tour after. But I think I stopped drinking entirely for that tour and for whatever reason. And then they were obviously... It was all new to them, so they were going out and, you know, getting pissed and having a great time, and you know, I found it bothering me when it really was unfair that it was, and it's like, but then I realized it's like, this is my problem, you know, they're just doing what I did, and they should be enjoying it, but I'm not, and I kind of felt like I was sort of been a bit of, you know, a bit of a stick in the mud and ruining other people's enjoyment of it. Mm-hmm. So between that and everything else, it felt like it was like, right, let's someone else come in here and have this amazing opportunity to do something. And then, yeah, that's how it went, really.
Oh, wow. And speaking of the early days, it's actually almost 16 years since Casually Dressed and Deep in Conversation was released.
Whoa. Bloody hell.
By your reaction, I'm sure that time's just flown since then.
It's mad to hear when you say that. Yeah, I mean,
I was just looking away thinking about how long I was.
Bloody hell. Yeah, 16 years. It does, yeah. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, in some ways it feels like yesterday, but in some ways it feels like...
Different life.
Yeah, I mean, literally an absolute lifetime ago. I mean, I sometimes find myself thinking that, you know, it's like, you know, that you're like literally a different person.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, I know there's a sort of scientific thing to it where you sort of completely regenerate your body over, you know, the course of so many, and that's how it feels, really. You know, it does feel like a different person, but
sometimes it feels like dreams to me. Like, I was like, did I do that then? That's mad.
Yeah.
Like, if the internet disappears now, I got no proof I was in a band, I don't think. I've got some CDs and stuff, but I'm not on my picture's not on them, so you can't prove it's mine.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, and I think, yeah, it was weird, and I sort of forgotten about a lot of those, you know, feelings, I suppose, and I'd like, so it was really nice to get to have like what, well, it was, ended up being two more. Opportunities to play with a band right at the end, you know, for the last two shows with the two London shows. I was I was only going to do, they're playing two nights in the Forum and in London, and the first night was doing Casually Dressed, and the second night was doing Hours in its entirety. And you know, it'd been one of those things where, you know, the band was sort of playing like smaller shows and whatnot, and doing, you know, making sort of more hardcore sounding records, really. Yeah. Like the last record, you know, it's more of a hardcore record than anything, yeah, which is very much, I mean, Conduit as well to a certain extent. You know, there's a lot of hardcore influences there, which is a lot of that comes from Matt and his love of hardcore, and you know, that really shining through. But yeah, you know, they'd be becoming more that, you know, that sort of band. And then when they announced the you know, the end of the band, which, you know, which I'd known about for quite a while, when they announced that and they put these shows on sale, I think, you know, they were like, oh, you know, I wonder how they're gonna do, you know. And I remember them just selling out instantly, and you know, I know they did like two Forums. But I believe at the time, I believe they got offered to move both shows up to Brixton. But they, I remember the guys didn't want to do that. They felt like, no, you know, no, this feels right. You know, it feels like the right place to do it. And yeah, like I say, I was always planning on going to that that last but one show, the Hours one. So, you know, got up and did a vocal on this year's Most Open Heartbreak from the... From the EP, The Four Ways, or Seven Ways, if you're in America.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did that, and you know, I sort of had my kind of farewell on that night. Then, you know, said goodbye to it all, really, because the next night, then I was managing a band from Japan for Raw Park called Cold Rain, and you know, obviously they'd come over from Japan, and they were doing that was their biggest UK headline show at the moment. At the time, they were playing the Borderline in London, and it was and I was like, oh yeah, so I can't come tomorrow because I'm going to be at that. But it was one of those things. It was like out of a movie. And I was there. I was over at the gig, and I was sort of like looking at my watch. And I was like,
They're not on yet.
And I actually said to the band, I said to the Cold Ring before the show, I was like, I'm really sorry about this, I've got to go. I was like, I've got something I got to do.
Yes.
You know, like a movie.
I saw it. Do you know what? That was my natural reaction to this movie happening, and you going, guys, I gotta go. Somebody that needs me right now.
That was it, yeah. So I like straight on the old Uber, straight in.
Yeah,
you know, the theme music playing on my journey. I don't know what Eye of the Tiger or something. I don't know, but and sort of got there.
Couldn't get in. Sold out.
Yeah. sold out. Banging on the door.
Banging on the back door.
Yeah. They wouldn't let me in. It was good night. But no, I still had my pass in my pocket, my tour pass from the night before. So I was like, right. And I sort of run in the stage door, and I think they like just started playing, and it was one of those like on the end of Spinal Tap, if anyone's listening has ever watched Spinal Tap, when Nigel Tufnell comes out at the end, and he's sort of standing side stage, and I think it was Gav like looked over at the side and sort of I was like, oh, you know, I came over and was like, come out and do Juno tonight. I was like, all right. So
don't have to ask me twice.
And the other, you know, the other guys didn't even know I was there. Like, so
who the fuck is this? Who's this? Yeah!
Get him off! Then, get him off!
I thought he'd left.
Yeah, can't get rid of him. Yeah, so come out and did that, and then, you know, it was pretty awesome. You know, finishing that night and sort of being on the stage while
part of it all.
Yeah, and being on there for the sort of the swan song, as it were, when the band played History, and, you know, myself was on stage, and Darren Smith, you know, the first guitarist for the first four records, you know, he was on the stage, and you know, some of our, you know, the crew and people who had been you know, important part of the band, you know, just so it was good that you know, got to do that and make that rush across town to make it.
That's awesome,
great story.
You might have regretted it forever otherwise.
I would have because I mean, you know, I it's one of those things where it seemed pretty final, you know. You know, a lot of times a band can split up, and even then in their head be like, oh, you know, probably come back in a couple of years, you know, we'll give it a minute, you know, before people started calling it an indefinite hiatus. But it did feel, you know, very final, because I knew Matt was, I think, you know, he was planning to move away to Germany.
Yeah, do you know what they're all up to now? I've spoke to Chris. Chris was on about coming on you.
Oh, good.
I'd like that very much.
You should. He's a very interesting chap, yeah. And
I just get Bob. You have to wind him up constantly, because Bob and Chris. Bob, mind, one of the most miserable people I've ever met, right? Loved, would be absolutely happy by Chris's misery all the time.
Well, he's going to be... I think he'd be sorely disappointed, because Chris is a very upbeat individual. Maybe it's not being around me every day, but I think Bob would be sorely disappointed now. He's very trim as well now, Chris.
Oh, Chris, is he?
Yeah. He's looking good. He's got into his running, you know, for the last few years.
Nice. Is he playing guitar anymore? Do you know? Or
funnily enough, I mean, it's
because he's unbelievable on guitar.
I mean, you know, one of the most. I don't even want to say underrated, because a lot of people do appreciate how great he is, you know. But you know, he definitely deserves to be. I feel like, you know, he developed his own style. You know,
I used to be blown away. I just watch him and just watch his fingers just up and down the board, like he's doing shapes I didn't even know you could do with your fingers, and he's just unbelievable on guitar. So,
well, this is it. I mean, his favorite bands are Pantera and the Smashing Pumpkins, and nice. I think, you know, when you listen back, he you know, he's got the sort of a virtuoso way of you know, making riffs and stuff, yeah. But whereas Pantera used to just really, you know, make it as heavy as possible, you know, he still had that sort of melodic sensibility of those bands like Smash Pumpkins and whatnot, that he would you know, work these technical riffs around. And it was, you know, it used to be the best thing when he used to set, because that was usually the way it'd work, is Chris would, you know, especially for the first couple of albums, and, you know, from the second EP and the first two albums, is that Chris would record just all these amazing riffs, and then just, you know, either send them to me or to Darren, and we just sort of build from it, you know, build from these incredible riffs. That's what you usually start. You know, sometimes Matt would write a sort of, because Matt comes from a different background, you know, punk and whatnot, you know, he's a very different style of guitar playing. I mean, for example, Streetcar and Hours, that was a Matt song, you know, when you hear it, you know, it's like galloping riffs and like finger tap, and you're like, nah, surely not. It's like, yeah, well, what that song started out as a sort of, if it wasn't an acoustic guitar, then it was certainly like a clean guitar. Yeah. And Matt, you know, just singing the whole song, the demo, there was none of that gallop in it. I think it was just like a really folky, you know, sort of thing. And yeah, you know, we took it and you know, Chris did the chugs, and, you know, I put the gallops in, and Darren did the, you know, the finger tapping stuff over the chorus and stuff. And that's a lot of the time we did that as well. It took Matt's song and just made it Funeral, so it was, yeah, you know, it was kept it quite fresh.
That's cool. What's Matt up to now? I've seen him on Facebook and stuff, and I see he's in Germany, but I'm not.
Yeah, well, Matt's in Germany. His because his wife is one of the co founders, owners of Avocado
Booking. Oh, Booking, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, they've always historically been a, you know, punk, hardcore booking agency. But you know, they've had some really, really big successes lately with bands like, you know, Parkway Drive being the main one. You know, they've booked them from day one. And I believe Matt's role, I'm pretty sure he's like the social media guy at...
Avocado,
yeah, the social media manager there. So that's what he's doing. So he's, I mean, from the moment he met his wife, you know, it was 2005, I think, you know, just before or after we did ours, he just fell in love with everything Germany. You know, he was a real, you know, he started picking up the language real quick and got really into that, you know, and just, you know, the German punk scene and hardcore scene. And just every time we went to Germany, he just felt like he was home, you know, when we always used to tour there. And it was obvious he'd always end up there. Yeah. So they're there and they're happy. Gareth, then, our original bass player, he's been living in Las Vegas, yeah, for, God, a long... Shit, I mean...
Well, we saw him... We did Warped Tour in 2009.
Right.
I think we saw him out there then.
Yeah, that makes sense, because he left the band in... I want to say sort of 2008, because he'd met his wife out there while we were on tour. I remember it was a funny old night, because we had a night off in Vegas, and obviously, you know, the casinos and whatnot, and we were in one of the casinos, and there was I believe it was either her or her sister. She was doing an acoustic set in one of the casinos, and. And yeah, they met that night, and the rest was history then. And he's been there ever since. He's got like three kids, I don't know.
Remember when we saw him, like you said, it'd been a year since he'd been over there or whatever. And he was just over the moon to your Welsh accents again. Just it had been so long. But yeah, we spent a
day. I don't know if he's got his anymore. I haven't chatted to him in a while. But
I see him on Instagram. I started following him on Instagram a couple of months back, but he doesn't do much talking on it. I'd like to know.
Yeah, like, I reckon
probably a twang.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he did start when he was still in the band. Instead of saying "mom," it'd be "mommy."
Mom.
Mom.
Hey, mom.
Yeah, but you'd think he's probably got a bit of the old Vegas twang by now.
Yeah. And going back to the first two records, as you mentioned, a lot of people re-see those as the focal point of Funeral for a Friend. But at that time, I think it's safe to say the band were kind of the poster child for that scene, and they even crossed over to the mainstream a lot, where you guys were on Top of the Pop quite a few times. You were even on Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
Yeah.
And you could just talk to us a little bit about all those mad experiences and seeing both of those worlds combined for you.
Yeah, it was wild, really, because everyone in the band, we'd all come from that it's very much DIY punk hardcore metal scene of just putting on our own shows around the South Wales area. In Bridgend, you know, here in Merthyr Tydfil, for the most part, at least once a month, we'd put on a all day in Newport in TJ's, which is sadly gone now, but we'd book it one, you know, a Saturday every month or two, and then just everyone who's actually in a band got to showcase that they were in a band. And then we had the same up here in Merthyr with RMs then, you know, you'd have that. And that was it, really. That was our sort of our community, our scene then. You know, there was nothing really much further than that. And then the first drummer in Funeral, who played on the first EP, Johnny Phillips, he left the band to work for the promoter SJM, and he still does now. But at the time, he started bringing bigger bands into that scene, really, into South Wales.
Well, he did Sick Future Promotions, didn't he, before SJM?
Sick Future, that was it. Yeah, you know, our bands got to play with these bigger bands then coming through, you know, your Stamping Grounds and your Will Havens and all sorts, really. You know, we had loads of stuff coming through. But when we started doing what we do in Funeral, all it was is just to be able to still play in those circles. But then, but when Johnny left and I joined the band, and he was sort of in that position at SJM, he offered us a tour with Boy Sets Fire, and we were like, oh my god, it's like our favorite band. And we're like, Jesus, it's like, and that was like, right, this is like the best thing that's ever going to happen to us, really. Let's do this. And yeah, people just started getting into it and hearing about it organically. And then, you know, we got signed to a major label then. We got signed to Atlantic and did our Four Ways to Scream Your Name EP.
There was that crazy Kerrang cover as well that had Matt's silhouette.
Yes.
And it said that, like, the best band in the world or whatever it was, or the future best band in the world.
Most exciting or something like that, wasn't it? Yeah, and that was it. There was us then in the UK. There was a lot of bands in the US that were coming through and bubbling, and, you know, bands like Finch and stuff like that in this sort of new Thursday and all that. That sort of new nobody knew what to call it back then. So that's where it wasn't emo, because emo was already there. It was, you know, you were J-Tree and you know Texas
kind of
is the reason.
Kind of post-hardcore vibe, I suppose, wasn't it? Post-hardcore.
Well, this must have been the conversation that magazines and stuff were having, you know. So it's like, oh, well, we need to make up something new for this. It's like, right, it's screamo it is then, because him up the back, he's screaming up there. which is me. And then My Chemical Romance started coming through, obviously in a big way, and bands like that, and that sort of, and Thrice, and The Used, and
TBS,
the
channel, the band, it's the TV channel,
Well, this is it. I mean, they all started coming, and that became the scene, and I guess we were the UK.
Ambassador to the scene?
Yeah, I guess we were. I guess we were, really, because, you know, we went out to the States really early on, after we'd before we'd done the first full length. No, we had just done the first full length, yeah. So we went out, and our first tour in the States was we were opening. It was Every Time I Die, who just released Hot Damn.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
At the time.
Okay.
Cave In.
Oh, riffs.
Yeah. And From Autumn to Ashes were headlining. And I mean, obviously, you know, Every Time I Die at that, it was like, you know, Hot Damn, it's become known as a sort of seminal record now. And
they're playing it in full at 2000 Trees, I believe.
They are.
Oh, well,
I will be in the pit for.
I shall
There'll
be.
No interviews going on when Every Time I Die are on, because I will be trying to break my own leg off to hit somebody with.
I will be there. Yes, you can hit me in my head. So it was that. And then Cave In then. I mean, I was getting it, actually, because a couple of weeks ago they were playing in London. I had a ticket, but I wasn't able to. The 12th of April 2019. Can you believe that?
Did she just chirp up then about when it was?
I didn't ask.
Did Siri just tell you when the gig was?
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Knock that off. This is over. The government are listening.
I thought I had Siri. Thanks, Siri. It was Friday, April 12th. Yeah. Fucking hell.
That's mental.
Proper Edward Snowden shit here, isn't it? But do you mind if I continue now, Siri? Or is that right with you?
You whistleblowing shit.
Yeah. Do not disturb. Yeah, put that on. Right. Sorry about that. Right. But no, I was just going to say, you know, that was the first US tour we did with them. And I hadn't really seen much of them since then. And tragically, Caleb, the bass player, was killed in a car accident back last year. So they were coming over and they were doing this show, like a fundraiser for the family and whatnot. And it was a shame not to see them, because they genuinely, if not the best, then one of the best bands I've ever toured with. I mean, certainly at that time, it was. They had just the record they had released prior was Antenna, which was more of a they'd started out as a super heavy I don't want to say metal, but they're super heavy.
It was that vibe, wasn't it?
Yeah. They started out as that, and then they started transitioning and getting into this more sort of space rock, alti rock thing, which I loved. You know, I loved loved that record, but they hadn't played any of the old stuff for ages, and I just remember turning up and being a fan and being like, oh, you know, I love that we get to tour with Cave In, and they opened, the first night they opened the set with it was one of the more atmospheric songs on the latest record, and then they just blasted into Moral Eclipse, which is like nice. One of the, and I was just like, oh my god! And then everyone in the crowd, you could see their face was just like, oh shit! And I didn't even know that they were going to bring all that stuff, and they bring stuff like Juggernaut into the set and Halo of Flies. I mean, if anyone's not a Cave-In fan, go and check out Cave-In. Jesus, definitely. Yeah. And Caleb, the bass player, he had the most incredible heavy vocal, and I remember that tour. So yeah, it was sad to see him go. Oh, one more story from that tour. I remember who does this, but every band, I don't know, had like 30 minutes support, and I remember playing in Minneapolis one time, and they got up to do their set, and it'd been the same set most nights, and then they got up and they started playing Dazed and Confused by Led Zeppelin. Yeah. So I was like, oh, it's interesting, what are they doing here? And they just played a full 30 minute jam of Dazed and Confused, and that and that was their set.
That was it. Like,
wow. That was it. Yeah, I was like, Jesus Christ.
Got to the Mars Volta school of turning up and just jamming for a bit.
I know, yeah. I was like, well, you're mental. R.I.P. Caleb.
What would you say was the best funeral tour that you did and the worst funeral tour that you did?
Yeah. Or even just moments in general.
Well, yeah, I mean, that in many ways was, was one of the best, just being in the US for the first time. I mean, I'd been once as a kid when I was 14, been to Disney World with the family. But just, this was the first time I'd ever, I suppose, seen all, been to New York or been to LA or been to any of these places. So, that was incredible having that. And I think best and worst tour was probably the one we did with Iron Maiden in 2003, because we'd certainly at least 3 out of 5 of the band had grown up with Maiden being one of their favorite bands, and obviously a massive influence. I mean, I remember being a kid and being down our local beach, the Porthcawl, down the beach, and getting myself a one of those sort of, they used to print them right there, and then you could pick a design off the wall. And I remember getting an Iron Maiden one, and having that. I remember one of my first memories, and failing my exams in school because I'd been listening to Live After Death instead of doing my revision. The reason we got signed, the first management deal, well, our only management deal, when we got signed to, before it was Raw Power, it was Sanctuary Artist Management, and Rod Smallwood, who's legendary manager, who's managed Maiden since day one, still does. We were playing the Kerrang Weekender down in Cambersands.
I was there, I think.
Were you? Yeah,
Is that the one where Lost Prophets and Glassjaw were playing as well?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
The Glassjaw build. Obviously,
yes, that was it. Yeah, it was like, I mean, it was on a campsite basically. It was in a Butlins.
Yeah, Butlins it was.
It was literally a Butlins, and all the bands and fans were staying in chalets and whatnot. So we were playing that, and I think, I don't know, Rod's son's band or something else. Somebody was playing anyway that he needed to be there. And he saw us, and he told Craig then to come and watch us, and we got signed and whatnot, and this was, I guess, early 2003, and then we did the record, signed to Sanctuary Artist Management, and then we were, if I recall this rightly, we were in the Sanctuary, the bar, and Rod came and said, Steve really likes your record. I was like, Steve who? Steve Harris. I was like, oh, does he? He's like,
oh, nice.
Wow, all right, amazing. He's like, yeah.
Tell him I like a couple of his.
Oh, yeah.
If it helps, yeah. Tell him I like a couple of his.
I like, I like Live After Death. And I was like, oh, mind-blowing. And then I think, and it was a few days later then, he got an email, and he said, the guys would like to, Maiden would like to take you on tour around Europe. I was like, Jesus Christ. It's like, wow. And that was actually the first after our album coming out, that was the tour that we went on, and it was 2 months.
Didn't you? We did the same Limp Bizkit. Do you want to go to Limp Bizkit? Yes.
I did.
It's probably going to cost you 18 grand. Yes. What? Yes. We want to do it.
Yeah. No, that was it. That was exactly it. It was like 2 months around Europe, and it was just Maiden headlining, and then us. And that was it. And that was the only thing. I mean, like I say, it was the best tour because they were just fantastic people, them and their crew. I mean, it really...
I've never heard anybody say a bad word about them.
Absolutely amazing. You know, it's one of those things that it was a big lesson to us in a lot of ways, really. And I mean, this is why it was the best tour. It was like, because we treated us so well and we were playing these big shows and it was Maiden. And, you know, getting to see how big bands operate, yeah. and operate, you know, correctly and treat people right and treat their support bands right. And
was Big Sean the stage manager? The
Big Sean was, yeah. He'd be watching The Wire whilst
5 minutes, gentlemen, 5 minutes.
That's him.
He shouted us before we were ever going to go on, yeah.
That's him, Big Sean, yeah. They're a brilliant crew, yeah. And, you know, I remember the first night of the tour, we were somewhere in Germany, and it was like it was a small warm up. It was 6,000 people, but it was a small warm up show apparently. And yeah, we played the show and that, and I can't remember. Yeah, I think it was Rod came back. He's like, "You boys had food yet?" I was like, "Oh, you know, we had a little bite." And he's like, "Oh, well, come and join us across the road." And there was this restaurant, and it was closed, but it's like, you know, they opened for Maiden, and it was a lovely restaurant. And all like can, so we're sitting there having just us and Maiden and Rod and Craig having a candlelit dinner with Maiden, and they were brilliant. I mean, during that tour, Darren, a guitar player, his wife was pregnant, and it must have been that, I don't know, she was induced or they were having a cesarean or something on a certain day. So he flew home for like literally one day to be there, you know, for the birth, and, you know, and then fly back, and you know, after a day off. So we got to the venue on that after the day off, and got in the dressing room, and there was like three magnums of champagne there, like, and cards from all the band, and I say, you know, congratulations, blah, 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 blah. And then that night then, they extended just after the show, just come up and, you know, we'll have a drink. So just sitting there listening to them all telling their tales, you know, down the years. But it was great. They were awesome. But the bad side is the Maiden fans absolutely hated us.
You've got all our brilliance. Oh, listen, how good all this. Oh, yeah, and then the fans hated us.
Yeah, a little caveat there at the end. they absolutely hated us, yeah. You know, we used to get... halfway through the set, and then the big old Maiden chants would start, and you're like, oh, bollocks. And it's like, oh, why did we have to put choir parts in our songs? Like,
we had the same, we had an email going, oh, do you want to do 5 dates with Linkin Park? And we were like, yeah, of course we do. And they were like, oh, you're going to be playing their first ever show in Greece? And I was like, all right, then. It's probably 5,000 people, I suppose, is it? 18,000 people. First ever gig in Greece, mind.
Tidy.
And, yeah, they were super lovely to us. They were all nice. And, it was just amazing to meet these people. And, yeah, like you said, I think meeting these big bands was an experience to us of how we should act. Because
exactly.
The majority of the biggest bands I've met have all been absolutely lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And you normally find it's the smaller bands who are divs.
Yeah, there's definitely a sliding scale where between being... a really small band, I mean, a really big band, that point in the middle is the shitty spot.
Yeah, someone's a bit, I'm a bit of a rock star now. And it's
usually bands who've had a little bit of success, but know it's probably fleeting.
Yeah.
And they're like,
I'll be a prick then.
If I just play up, maybe this will bring it back. But I don't know. Our Lord doing with the Hollywood Undead guys, are they all right? Have they said anything?
No, they haven't said anything.
I had a bit of trouble with them once.
I heard it on the podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they that tour manager's nice.
Yeah. It's probably been about 15 years since we played with them, mind. So they probably have learned to tour since, because that was the first ever support tour they were doing with us.
I think in fairness, yeah, because of the big old venues that they're playing on the tour, maybe they don't even see each other. I don't know. Yes. Maybe they've not even met yet. Yeah. Perhaps not.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, before we go, just give us an update on what your bands are doing, if you want. I think for people to check out.
Yeah, well, I know we talked a bit about Loathe and Holding Absence a good bit earlier. But exciting things with Sleep Token at the moment. Not too much. I mean, we just signed with just a deal with Spinefarm Universal, which is super exciting.
That's awesome.
So I've got, you know, good history with those guys there. But yeah, there's new music coming very, very soon, and good things happening. They're playing with Baby Metal on July the 2nd in Brixton. And
it's a band I've never understood.
Baby Metal.
Don't get it. Do not.
I thought you meant like just because they sing in Japanese.
Oh, no, yeah. Two things, yeah. I don't understand. One, Japanese, well, one, two, Baby Metal.
One of their songs is about chocolate.
Oh, and I'm supposed to get that now, am I?
Yeah.
I'm not a woman. Why would I be interested in that? Like,
in chocolate?
Yeah, but I don't know, it's just...
Okay, anyway.
I don't care what people pretend to like about them.
What, chocolate?
No, not chocolate. I love chocolate. Baby Metal. I just don't get it. I don't, like... Metal fans years ago were like, I hate pop stars. They don't even play their own instruments. And now metal fans are like, I love Baby Metal. These four Japanese girls have got nothing to do with metal whatsoever.
It's probably because it's K-pop with a little bit of metal, and they secretly love K-pop. So now...
Ooh, love, yeah, but nobody really... Koreans love K-pop. That's it. I don't understand this BTS stuff as well. I don't know.
If you have got a little passing interest in Baby Metal, then may I suggest a bit of Maximum the Hormone, a wonderful Japanese band. They're absolutely incredible. They've been going for a long time, but they mix really wild metal with K-pop. Well, not K-pop, J-pop, because they're Japanese. Yeah. But yeah, it's wild. You should check them out. They're like the Japanese System of a Down, if you like.
Oh, nice. Fox Joe?
Yes, yeah. We're about to announce something very cool very soon, which I can't tell you.
Well, I don't know. When does that happen? When does that come out?
In a couple of weeks.
You probably would have been on by then.
I'll have been on by then, but so in a few days they'll be announcing something pretty cool, and they'll be out on tour as well. They've been out on tour recently with Black Peaks and with Pagan, and they're at that Smashing Sound in 2000 Trees Festival were talking about earlier.
Nice.
So yeah, definitely catch them out there, and
it'll do.
Yeah, and he had a nice chat with old Moose Thomas.
Yes, from Kill the Lights fame.
Yes, yeah. So things have been cogs have been turning behind the scenes there. So
nice.
Again, things that I could announce now.
We should have definitely waited a couple of weeks to do this one.
Well, you could just tell us now, and then we've got the exclusive. You might get in trouble, though. Yeah. Well, it's fine.
I bloody will.
It's all right, Drake. Come back on when you can.
But yeah, good stuff happening there. People have been asking, you know, lots of people are like, oh, when's music coming out? When you're touring? It's like, soon. So good. That's good. And just a couple of...
Will they be doing their own headline tour then, or are they supporting someone? Oh,
I don't know. We shall have to wait and see.
Okay.
But yeah, and then, you know, a couple of new things, but behind the scenes they were just sort of building up, and you know, brand new stuff, I guess you'll hear more about in the next few months. But also representing my very, very good friend Colin Richardson, the
nice
legendary record producer slash mixer slash maniac.
He's done some fantastic things, haven't he?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, he's, you know, from Slipknot to Machine Head, you know, he did the Casually Dressed Funeral record, which is obviously where I first met him. Just so many classic records, and he's currently recording a record by some other Welshmen at the moment called Those Damn Crows, you may be familiar with.
Yeah. One of them's a patron
of
our podcast, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, there you go. You'll be enjoying this shout out then.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. But we'll cut this out so you can't hear it now. So that'll teach you to become a Patreon.
Yeah.
What are you joking? Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, so if anyone else in bands becomes a Patreon, next time on, I'll mention you as well.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, this is the thing. Hey, if you're in a band and you want to get some press, why not become a patron?
There you go.
That's awesome.
Patreon.com/thatman.
Nice. Good plug. Anything else? I can't think.
I mean, there'll be bits and bobs coming through, but that's the main stuff now. But and then new music from the growling that I was mentioning earlier on the show,
Subtraction.
But there's one track up online called "Slave to the Curse." You can check that out. It sounds nothing at all like "Funeral for a Friend."
Before we go, though, I forgot to mention. Speaking of screaming. Back in the early days, you did have a lovely Britney Spears-type microphone.
I did.
Can you explain that for us very quickly, please?
Well, anybody can they? Anyone who plays drums can...
Yeah, but...
It's hands-free, isn't it?
Hands-free kit. Right. It's like...
I know.
It's like when you drive in a car and
you're
having chat.
Bluetooth on your drums.
It's like... I sort of pioneered Bluetooth. Yeah, really. I'll take credit. No, essentially what it was, I was drumming in... I was in Honda McLean at the time, and I was saying earlier, Johnny had left Funeral, and they had their heavy vocalist as well, and he left at the same time as well. A guy called Matthew Evans, who was a fantastic artist by the name of Snow Skull. You should check him out. Yeah.
Yep.
So they had a Radio 1 session booked. It was some sort of rock show session. And it was literally in a few days, and they were like, "Oh man, can you just help us out and play drums on the session?" I was like, "Yeah, cool, I'll do that, no worries." And then did that. But then there was no heavy vocals on any of it, and I'd never really done them before. And they'd be like, "Oh, it's missing these heavy vocals, isn't it?" So we overdubbed some heavy vocals, and sort of everyone had a go. So then Matt had a go. Chris had to go. I think I was either last but one. And I was like, "Oh, sounds all right there." I was like, "Yeah, I will do. We'll keep them on it. Yeah, we'll pretend that's Mevins." Well, we weren't, because it sounded nothing like him. But it's like, "Yeah, those will do. Those sound all right." And then it became, "All right, so can you do those live as well?" I was like,
"Can you never leave?" All right, yeah.
I was like, "Boys, I only just come in to help you with one session." And then there was one, which I think you came to, actually. There was a show then that was booked in with Hell is for Heroes in Newbury Corn Exchange.
Yep.
And,
came up in a van. Yeah.
Which to us at the time was like playing Wembley.
Yeah.
And the guy from the record label was like, "Oh, go on, we really need those vocals. We got people, we got important people coming down and this and that from London, you know, industry people." And I was like, "Oh, I've only just learned the set on drums." Like, I was like, "I'll mess it up if I start trying to do it." I'm like, "Well, if we get you one of those like headset mics things, then?"
Yeah.
I was like,
"Give it a bash, man."
I was like, "I don't know. I'll give it a try." And then we'd done it in practice, and because I didn't have to sort of think about it and didn't have to move, didn't have to turn my head into the mic. I was like, "Yeah, all right, I can probably do this then. All right, go on then." So I did it, and it was all right. To be honest, I probably only did that for about 10, 15 shows, maybe.
Okay.
Well, a lot of
did you ever accidentally swear into the mic? Like, do you ever miss a drum and go, "Oh, fuck!" Oh.
I probably did, or burped or something like that. But that was it then. And I was like, "Oh, do you know, I look like a right twat." can you put it like a boom stand up? Which is a bit more difficult at first. But I mean, the other thing then is it was having that thing on my head. It was just so noisy around the cymbals, and I sounded like shit anyway. So, So then I got one of those mics then on a boom stand. So A, it didn't sound like shit, and B, I didn't look like such a knob.
Yeah. So I remember when Mevs first left, and I remember speaking to Darren after it, and I was like, "You need a screamer now, Ed? Do you need somebody to come in and do some screaming?" And he was like, "No, I think Matt can do it." And I was like, "Yeah, are you sure you don't need anyone? I could probably find someone." And he was like, "No, we're all right." And I was like,
"Need a DJ?
Yeah. What about a disc jockey? How can I join this band? That's what I'm asking, Dad. We got the same surname, and you've actually got the first name of my my half brother as well. So,
all right, I'll join another band and come on tour with you in 8 years. Right, I'll do it the hard way.
Like that, is it? Right then, I'll show you. You go. I'll make my own band. It's taking forever.
There we are. 8 years later, here we are together in Amsterdam, eating walk to walk, watching 6 episodes of Star Wars. The dream, innit?
I knew this was happening. I knew it. I told you tonight. Ah, I knew. Master. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers, thank you very much.
Cheers, chaps.
Socials. That's what we
need to. Where can people find you is what you normally like to say.
Yeah, where can people find you online?
Oh, forgot now. Christ. Do you know what? Just go to... Tell you what's the best thing for you to do. If you go to futurehistory.management,
nice.
All the links are on there.
Nice, and you can check out the bands, the lineup, the band's links to stuff, the music, the Future History playlist that you put out every Friday.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
I created one of them 2 weeks ago.
You did.
Mark Andrews did one last week, WWE Wrestler.
Full of Superstar.
WWE Superstar.
Oh, hang on.
Sorry.
Yeah, and he's full of WrestleMania hits, that is.
Yeah, so. Former
You know
former
Triple H
guest.
Listens to this.
Yeah, Paul's a big fan.
Paul, big Paul.
Yeah.
I think that's... That's it now, I think. Thank you very much for doing this.
Cheers,
it's been awesome.
You're welcome.
We've talked for a good hour and 22 minutes.
Do.
Nice. Nice. Longest one yet, I reckon.
So she said.
Yay! Leave it at that. You're listening to Sammy Podcast! Awesome. That was Ryan Richards of Future History Management, formerly of Funeral for a Friend, and one of my most underrated metal bands from South Wales, Honda McLean. Did you ever see Honda McLean?
No, I don't think I ever got to see him.
Bro, some of the best performances I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Metal band. They had like lines in their songs from like old 80s stuff. So like I Have the Power from He-Man and stuff like that. And they just used to climb each other, spit on each other. I know that sounds gross, but it was very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, obviously I've seen Funeral for a Friend more times than I can count.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ryan just dropping some great knowledge and quotes there from both sides of the music industry, from playing in a massively successful band and managing
other successful bands.
Yeah.
So yeah, check out futurehistory.management online to check out Ryan's management company and the bands on his roster. He's got some fantastic bands. Loathe, Holding Absence,
Killer Lights,
Mooseman, Foxjaw, Sleep Token.
Yeah,
there's just so many.
It's countless.
Yeah, and he manages Colin Richardson as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of
famous producer.
A lot of exciting things coming from them very soon. So yeah, keep an eye out for all of that.
Yes, that's awesome. Anything else this week?
You're playing some festivals.
Oh yes, Raiders are playing Teddy Rocks Festival on Saturday, May the 4th. Don't make the joke.
Oh.
I could see it then. As soon as fourth came out of my mouth, I looked into your face and I could see Star Wars building. Don't know. Please. Look, before we start that interview with Ryan, we had a bit of a tiff. Let's not end with a tiff, right?
I'm surprised you haven't hit me by now. It's been close,
I'll be honest with you. If we've been on it, we've been friends. It's a safe space to speak how we want to. You've been close on a clip a few times.
I reckon this podcast is just a therapy session, to be honest.
A lot of the times it is, yeah. It's you getting all the puns out of your body.
Yeah.
And me getting my rage of those puns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you. If you've got this far, tweet at us the word salmonella.
Okay.
I just want to check if people get this far.
And you can do that via twitter.com/sapnin. Instagram.
Whoa, it's happening. Pod.
Oh,
he's gone lackluster. He don't care anymore. Twitter.com/sapnin pod. Instagram.com/sapnin pod.
Sorry, I meant to say patreon.com/sapnin pod.
Check that out, please.
Check it out and support the podcast with all the mad tears you can experience.
You don't have to, like, but...
We would appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. This is absolutely free to anybody who wants it.
But if
you can check us out, a couple of quid for a drink. Well, it's not for a drink. It's so we can travel and do this podcast. So.
Yeah, make everything bigger and better. And if you want a little bit extra enjoying our community, which is a top laugh, then yeah, do that as well.
We've just done 4 Skype calls today and they've all been great.
They've been very interesting.
Yes. Yeah, we won't go into much detail because that's for Patreons only, but that's... Yeah. Anyway. Let's thank these Patreons.
Yes.
This week's Patreons that we need to thank are... The fantastic Emma Barber, Paul Bennett, Jeff 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 Bennett, J Paul Hirschfield, Kylie Wheeler, Scarlett Charlton, Janelle Kasten, Melissa Roche, Sam Ledgerwood, John Price, Emily Snoggles.
Yeah, Senegals.
Is it? Oh, piss! I was smugging about that. I was like, sorry. Martina McManus, Mark Blatton, Marcy Jacobson, Lydia Henderson, Scott Jones, Jenny Robinson, Kieran Lewis, Kelly Cannon, Lucy Diaz, and the wonderful Tony Michael. Thank you very much for everybody who's on that list by there for being a Patreon and being a top human.
Yeah, I like to call them the elite.
The elite.
And we love you very much.
We do. Thank you very, very much. Anyway, that's been episode 23 of Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and my friend Morgan Richards.
I'm not going to make the Blink-182 joke.
Good. For your sake. That's it, I think. Thank you very much again to Ryan Richards at Future History Management. As I've said before, check out all the bands there. He's got loads of fantastic bands. He's got a future of British music, in my opinion, but we'll see. We'll see. I'm not wrong. yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Anything more, Morg?
Keep complimenting my eyebrows.
Oh, my ego, ego. Yeah, keep telling him how good his eyebrows are, everyone. Sapnin!
Singing as well, man.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.